Welcome back, hour number three, and it is Wednesday night, and that means it's bedtime. It's time for Jordan Maxwell's Bedtime Stories, our latest installment. I think it's number four, so we look forward to tonight and finding out what Jordan has for us. Hello, Jordan. Why do I think of you as Santa Claus with gifts? I don't know.
What do you think of me at all? I appreciate it.
Oh, come on. 25-year-old friends, what do you think of me at all?
I know. We go back a long time, my friend, and I thank you for your friendship over those many years. I was trying to remember the person that we had in common. I think that probably brought us together. His name, if you remember, or maybe I'm wrong, but I seem to remember there was a guy named Bruce Stephen Holmes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Santa Barbara to sit and chat with him. I used to do his radio show when he was doing an FM show at the University of Santa Barbara.
Yeah, KCSB FM, Stephen Holmes. I think he called his program Timeless Voyager.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I knew Bruce, and he actually had me on his program once, way back when. Good man, good man.
Yeah, he's always been a very, very dear friend. And I think that's probably where I first heard of you was through Bruce Stephen Holmes.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, and I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah. Wow. He's a publisher today. He's a book publisher today. Mm-hmm. He's out of radio. So, anyway, but I was thinking about, what have I talked about and where do we go from here? Quite a few things I wanted to bring out. First thing is that back in 1989, the last part of 89, I had a contractual deal with a television producer in Hollywood who was very, very successful, and he wanted to do a video on me and possibly put it on television about some of my experiences, and so we decided we were going to do this, and so what we did is, of course, you'll probably understand, a lot of people in the audience may not know, but if you're going to do a television show, a really professional one, you first of all storyboard the story you're going to tell. You write it all out and storyboard it, and then you collect the pictures and the diagrams and the books and the quotes and everything that you want to present in the video. And you storyboard that, and when you get it all done, then you go into a studio, which my producer already had a small studio in his office in Hollywood that had the equipment that we call offline editing bay.
Right.
And that's where you take all of your pictures and documents and everything you're going to present in the show, and you record it and put it down on tape and record it, professionally recording it all, so it looks good, sounds good. And then when you've got all of that whole 1 hour or 2 hour show completely recorded in your office, then you take those tapes over to a really a professional online editing bay, which is very expensive, but that's the Final Cut Pro, so mm-hmm. to speak. That's right. The Final Pro production. And so you take your thing that you've put together with all of the pictures and documents and everything on tape, take it to the studio, and now you're going to put it into the final form before it goes on television. And so we did it in 10-minute bits and pieces. I worked in my producer's office. His name was Leonard Martinson, and I worked in his office in Hollywood. It's actually in Century City. And so I put together the first 10 minutes, the introduction, the pictures, documents, etc., for my first television show called The Naked Truth. And so when I got the first 10 minutes done, because we knew it was 10 minutes because I would walk through it with myself and him and talk about and read and do what I had laid out, and it took me about 10 minutes to do it all. So we figured, okay, so we got the first 10 minutes done. So we take that 10 minutes worth of product and go to the online studio. And that's where it gets expensive because this is the last and final. So we go into the online studio and we lay down the first 10 minutes. And that's where all the magic is done, with the music and all the extra bells and whistles. And when that 10 minutes was finished, it took a couple of days to do 10 minutes. But when it was finally done, the first 10 minutes was finished and it looked great. And so we thanked them and we made an appointment to come back in 2 weeks to do the next 10-minute piece. So we go back and we work for a couple of weeks and get the next 10 minutes of the program. And then we go back in, we call them to make another appointment. And when we call to make another appointment, we are told that company does no longer exist. It went out of business. It's out of the city. It's gone. And we drove down. We drove down to the location, and all the doors were open. All the windows were open. There were people in there sweeping up and cleaning up. All the walls were gone. Everything was gone. Period. Out of the building.
Scrubbed.
In 2 weeks.
Wow.
And so my producer said, all right, well, whatever, we'll just go find another. So, well, of course, in Hollywood, there's all kinds of major big online studios, so it's not hard to find another one. So we found another online studio in Hollywood, and we call them and make an appointment. And we go down, big operation, major production studio in Hollywood, we do the next 10 minutes. And so when we're through with that 10-minute piece, now we've got the first 20 minutes of the show done.
Mm-hmm.
So then we go back and we're going to work on the next 10 minutes. And when the next 10 minutes was ready, we call that studio. And they are out of business. They moved out of the building. They're gone. They no longer exist. And we drove down there. Windows are all open. Doors are all open. There are no walls. They moved out. They're gone. It's over. And so...
What year was this, Jordan, about?
This was 1989 to 1990.
Right.
Late 89 into 1990. And so we find another... a company and set it up for the third time. And we go in, do that 10 minutes, and when we're ready for the next one, we call them and they're out of business, gone, cleaned out. They're not even in the building. Nobody knows where they went. They're just gone, period. And so we found another one. So we call another company. This is the fifth one. And we went down and did the fifth 10-minute period for the video.
Right.
And when we called them to do the final 10 minutes
for the one-hour show.
They were gone. Out of the building. Nobody knows where they went. They are gone.
How did you find these companies? In the Yellow Pages?
Well, the thing is, Jeff, these were five major, well-heeled highly successful television and motion picture studios with millions of dollars in equipment and online equipment. These were very well established houses that Hollywood and television uses.
Mm-hmm.
All five were out of business, out of the building, and nobody knows where they went, and they're gone within 2 weeks of each other. Five of them. So I don't know what that tells you. I'm just telling you what happened. So I'm totally sure that somebody in the spirit world did not want me doing what I was getting ready to do.
Well, I would say don't take it personally, but you have to take that personally. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it became very obvious to Leonard and myself, and Leonard even said that. He says, somebody is giving us a message. Wherever we go to do a little bit of work, whoever helps us is gone, off the planet. They're out of business completely. So
well, what does that suggest? Does that suggest that maybe these companies were already Intel or backed by Intel, that Hollywood is an Intel operation? We know that pretty much, but to pull a company apart like that, that quickly, five of them,
five,
in that period of time, is almost, it defies description. That's really astonishing. And
no,
I'm wondering if they were government, if they were Intel, I could see it. That's how you do it real quick. You pull your assets and you go. But if these were privately owned companies, they would have had to have been threatened more severely than I can even imagine, or paid off, or something, if they were privately owned companies.
Yeah,
now, if they were intelligence operations, something else.
But what was absolutely phenomenal, in my opinion, is the fact that they weren't even a chair left in the building.
Bizarre.
Every time we went down, the building was wide open, open for rent, totally open with all the doors, windows all open. Nobody's there, period. 2 weeks ago was a major production.
Did you ask anyone around there?
Yeah, we asked and said, well, where did they go? And they said, we don't know. They just went out of business overnight. And within the last week, they just pulled all the equipment and gone. We don't know where they went, and we don't know what the world. They're just gone.
So you got 5 10-minute segments.
Yeah.
And
each one cost a major corporation to go out of business within 2 weeks.
What happened to that video, Jordan? Did you finish it?
I finally finished it. That's
hard
a whole
to believe.
Story. Say it again?
It's hard to believe. I mean, if they wanted to stop you, they could have done something more severe.
Well, you would think so, but...
I'm glad they didn't, but this is absolutely bizarre.
It is. And today, if you talk to my my longtime friend, my producer, he's in Orange County. He still has a big production company down there.
Uh-huh.
We still talk about that. He's still shaking his head. He said, I have no idea how to explain what happened.
Wow.
But five major production companies in Hollywood that were very, very, very impressive.
I gotcha. Yeah.
And they're gone.
This is one of the strangest things I've ever heard.
Just totally gone. And nobody knows where they went. Nobody knows where the equipment went. It's all open, wide open. They're sweeping out the place and waiting for new renters.
Tenant.
Because they're just gone.
How strange. How really bizarre. Wow.
Yep.
Did the video do well?
It did very well, but there's a whole story to that, and I will have to get into one day because it was, it was sabotaged. It was sabotaged, but it still did well, considering mm-hmm. that it was sabotaged, but it still did pretty well. And that's a whole other story. But
let me say something to our listeners here about Jordan. If you don't know Jordan Maxwell is without question, responsible for the careers of probably more people in the so-called alternative occult conspiracy field than you could imagine. His work has been pilfered, borrowed, stolen, and reworked. But he literally has created the careers of probably a couple of dozen people, some major, some minor, who are known commodities, maybe more. And how many films? How many? Well, look at National Treasure, right?
That's right.
It's just nutty, nutty.
National Treasure, and they even call me on National Treasure 2, the second one, and wanted me to do a cameo appearance in it, and I turned them down. They called me the first one. They called me on the second one. I turned them down. I wasn't interested, and National Treasure 1 and 2, but also The Da Vinci Code. I myself was actually startled at that, because in the very beginning of the movie, Da Vinci Code, Tom Hanks is in an audience, and he's sitting in the audience, but he's the speaker for the evening, mm-hmm. and the host gets up on the platform, and they've got a slide presentation, and there's a slide projector, and there's projecting a picture on the screen, and the speaker said, "We have with us tonight as a speaker, the world's foremost expert on their secret societies and occult emblems." And I thought, that's rather strange. Who has that title? and then he comes up, Tom Hanks comes up on the platform, and he's standing talking about something, either the dollar bill or the pyramid on the dollar bill or something.
Right.
But he's also standing in the projection, in the line of projection.
Right.
So some of it's being projected on him as he's turning around and pointing to these different symbols.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's exactly out of one of my first videos, where I was in the audience. I was introduced as an authority on secret societies and symbols, and then I went up, and they turn on the projector, and it's projecting on me, and I turn around, and I'm pointing at the screen. That's precisely the same picture in the Da Vinci Code.
They borrowed your video and ran with it.
Yeah. Well, and then I came out with a book called, Matrix, the whole idea of the Matrix of Power. Mm-hmm. Showing the secret societies who are operating around the world, mm-hmm. and how they're using high technology to manipulate the human mind. And then a few years later comes a movie, Matrix, talking about the same thing. And so I've had so many friends in the motion picture and television industry, writers and researchers, tell me in private conversations, we've used a lot of your stuff, Jordan. We used you in the idea in Matrix. Mm-hmm. We used your concepts in National Treasure, etc. And my comment was always the same. Well, strange, I've never gotten a check from anybody. Nobody ever sent me a check. So, but that's
I offered you a cameo. Let's not get greedy. You turned it down. Gee.
Well, I turned that down. Yeah.
That's and funny. So, now, who was in those movies? I can't remember the guy's name. Why? I can never remember his name.
I know. Actor. I like him. I like him, too. Remember his name.
He's made a few interesting films and a lot of bombs.
Anyway, he lives in Las Vegas now. I'm not sure. But anyway, so I told my producer about the prophecies that had been given to me by Kenny Kingston and other world famous.
Tell us
psychic.
Again about that for our listeners who didn't hear before.
Oh,
Kenny's prophecy.
You know, about the prophecy Kennedy Kingston gave me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was at the stop me if you want anywhere, but I was at the Whole Life Expo that our dear friend
sure.
Paul Andrews was putting on in 1989, and it was a big, huge convention of New Age people and things. And
they were big things back then. In L.A.? Oh, big, 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 big.
And so I was walking down the aisle in this big convention, big expo convention, and I see this table where Kenny Kingston is supposedly the world's foremost psychic. And he's called the psychic to the stars.
Yeah.
And I talked about this before, but I'll give it to you quickly.
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, Nicolas Cage. Exactly. That's him. I really like Nicolas Cage. But anyway, do you want to hear the rest of this?
Oh, yeah. It's a great story. I think it's worth repeating. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so Kenny Kingston is a psychic. And at that point, I didn't care much. I really didn't know much about psychics and what they do. But he had a lot of pictures at his table of him with famous people. Mm-hmm. And so I figured whatever it is that he does, he must be good because he's got all these famous people from the Queen of England to all the big shots that run the world,
right?
And with Kenny. And so I found out, well, what he does is he gives you prophecies about the future and personal prophecies,
mm-hmm.
As a psychic. And so he had a little sign that says to buy a tape or a little tract that he had written for $10, and he would give you a 1 minute complimentary psychic reading to show you what he can do.
Uh-huh.
So I bought the little track, and I was standing there reading, and you stand waiting for your turn,
yeah.
And finally my turn shows up.
And his back was to you, right? Wasn't that?
Yeah, his back was to me. He's sitting at the end of the table because there's so many people, in the aisles, you can't take up room in the aisle. So you stand real close to his table. And then when it's your turn, you go to the end of the table, turn around, and then Kenny will talk with you. And so the person ahead of me had already gone and talked to Kenny, and I was holding up the line, just standing and reading this pamphlet. And so when it finally occurred to me to look up that I'm holding the line up, Kenny was in the process of turning his chair around. He had a swivel chair, and he turned his chair around to see if somebody was holding the line up, which I was, and our eyes met. And the moment our eyes met, he pointed right at me, and he said, "You have come back. They have brought you back." And I said, "Me?" And he said, "Yeah, you. You have come back. They have brought you back to expose religion and government conspiracies." And he said, "You're going to make some of the most powerful enemies a man in this world can make. But that's what you've been given to do. That's your job. You've been brought back to do it."
Wow. Hold on a minute. We have to pause. Kenny was on the program several times, and what a gracious, nice, fun kind of a personality. Just...
Oh, he was wonderful.
Effervescent, and just really a nice man, and talented too. All right.
Very.
Jordan and I will be right back. Okay, and back with all of you and Jordan. Okay, Jordan, next.
So anyway, that was that. And so I had told my producer, Leonard Martinson, about Kenny, because Kenny and I became very close friends. And I used to do openings and introductions for him at different lectures, etc. I would introduce him.
Nice.
And so
nice.
I told my producer about Kenny, and my producer knew even less than I did. And so I told him about what Kenny does as a psychic and gives prophecies and psychic readings, etc. And so I was telling my producer, and I said, "If ever you get a chance, Leonard," I said, "if ever you get a chance where you see a psychic fair, where there are psychics," I said, "why don't you just go to a psychic fair just to see what happens? Couldn't hurt, and talk to a psychic and see what they say." And he said, okay, well, I'll keep that in mind. And so a couple of weeks later, he had to go to, he was in Los Angeles, but he had to go to Florida, to Orlando, I guess it was, where the motion picture studios, because he had an office there. He had an office in Florida. So he told me, I've got to go to Florida for a couple of days, and I'll see you when I get back, and I'll call you. And so he called me the next afternoon, and then he said, you're not going to believe it. He said, when I got into Florida last night, I checked into just the closest hotel, and in the lobby was a big sign there having a psychic fair in that hotel the next day. And he said, so when I come down this morning, I had a little time, and there was a psychic fair going on, and I just got through talking to you a couple of days ago about a psychic fair. So he said, so I decided to get a psychic and see what, you know, see what happens. So he said all the readers, all the different psychics were there, were busy, except one young man by himself. And he said he really looked very shabby. He was not very well dressed. But I figured if he's there, he must be a psychic, so I don't have time to wait. So he said, so I took this young guy, and he said he absolutely blew me out of the chair. He knew everything about me correctly. He knew about my business, my partners in Europe, my marriage. He said there was nothing this kid did not know about me. And he said, and he really got my attention. And then he said to me, and Leonard's telling me this over the phone.
Yeah.
And he says, and he told me, right now you are doing a video production with a man whose the initials are JM. That's all I know. I don't know his name, but his initials are JM. And you're doing a video with him. And ultimately, you will do 5 videos. But you're doing one right now. And Leonard said, and then he said to me very seriously, be very careful around this man because both God and the devil are involved in his life. Be very careful around him because both God and the devil are involved in his life. You don't know it and he doesn't know it, but be very, very cautious around him because there's a lot of strange stuff going on around him and God and the devil are watching him. And I thought, well, I don't know what that means. I'm just telling you what he said, but I come to think that there may be something to it, even if I don't understand it. Well, I just thought that was interesting. And
that's fascinating. Some of those people are really gifted or whatever you want to call it, but they can see.
Oh, yeah, and it's just amazing.
They're remote viewers is what they are, the good ones.
Yeah, very. Yeah. And so, and back when I was working at in San Diego for the Truth Seeker Company, I had a 2-bedroom condo, and on Friday afternoons, my friend Tim Leadham, T-I-M, Tim Leadham, was the editor for the book I was working on. We will work on this book with Steve Allen, the musician, comedian Steve Allen, myself, Tim Leadham, and quite a few other authors. And
I didn't know you worked with Steve Allen.
Oh, yeah. Steve was a very close friend of mine.
Yeah. He was on this program very shortly before he was taken from us in that crash.
Weird crash. Yes, I know about that, yeah.
He knew exactly what you know about where it's all going. He knew.
Oh, yeah. And I used to go to his home, and he was so incredibly brilliant, but he was so nice to me, always so very cordial and so very nice to me. And I really appreciated his friendship. But anyway, I had a 2-bedroom, as I said, a 2-bedroom condo, and on Fridays, Tim Leadham, who was our editor for the book, would come down and stay with me on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then go home on Monday back up to Los Angeles. And so we were working on the book every weekend. Well, one weekend, Tim comes down, he's staying with me, and in the middle of the night, I'm in the middle of the night. I woke up, but I didn't open my eyes for some reason. I woke up, I knew I was awake, and I was hearing fire. I was hearing a fire, crackling of fire. But I instead of opening my eyes, because I had just woke up, heard the crackling of the fire, and I was concentrating on smelling, if I could smell smoke. So for a few seconds, I just concentrated on trying to see if I was smelling smoke with the fire I was hearing.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't. There was no smell of smoke. And so I opened my eyes, and when I did, I let out a yell. At 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I let out a yell. It scared me, and it woke up Tim in the other bedroom. When I opened my eyes, there was an angel. I cannot describe it in any other way, but a typical, incredible, large angel standing, looking at me, and he was almost touching the ceiling, but he had incredibly gorgeous wings and the light emanating from behind the wings was lighting him and his whole body with the wings, wow, lighting it up in such a way that it was absolutely gorgeous, beautiful. But it scared me, because when I opened my eyes, the fire that I was hearing was the angel had a sword, and he was pointing the sword, holding it and pointing it right between my two eyes. And so when I opened my eyes, it was a sword of fire. There was no blade. There was a blade of fire, and it was crackling, and that's what I was hearing. But it wasn't burning. It was just a blade of fire. And it frightened me. And then when I jumped and sat up, looked at this angel holding this sword of fire, the angel picked the sword up, brought it up in front of him, and then slowly but surely disappeared. Little by little, he just kind of dropped off until it just disappeared. And at that moment, Tim comes into my bedroom and flips on the light, and he said, "What was that?" And I said, "Tim, you're not going to believe what I just saw in my bedroom." And I told him it was an angel with a sword of fire, and it was pointed right between my two eyes, and it scared me to death. And since then, I know that this is exactly the way pictures and books have pictured the Archangel Michael. I don't know what I'm not verifying anything. I'm not chiseling anything in stone. I'm just telling you what I saw.
Right.
And what I saw was an angel with a sword of fire pointed directly at me, and it frightened me.
Did your yell wake up Tim?
My yell woke him up. Because it really scared me.
Yeah. Did he come in right away to your room and knock on the door or anything?
No. And so Tim, because our doors were open, he came in to flip on the light to see what happened to me.
Yeah.
And just as that angel was disappearing, slowly but surely disappearing in front of me, and by the time he got up, put his shoes on and came, and slippers on, and then came into my room and flipped on the light, and I was sitting there in the bed, sitting straight up, and Tim said, "What in the world was that all about?" And I said, "Tim, you're not going to believe what I saw in my bedroom just now." So I have seen, I can't verify, what it is, what the phenomena was, whether I was just, I don't know. All I know is what I saw with my eyes. And it was a while after that, I don't know how long after that, but in that same condo during the week, I was there by myself. One night I was sound asleep. And this is in San Diego, Rancho Bernardo area, sound asleep. All of a sudden, in a dream, an angel appeared to me in a dream, and they said to me, "Get up and go in the bathroom. Your nose is going to bleed." And I remember thinking to myself, why would you tell me that? And so I said in my dream, I said to the angel, I don't understand. What are you talking about? And the angel said to me in the dream, the angel said, look, get up, go into the bathroom. Your nose is going to bleed. And I argued with the angel. Uh-huh. I remember doing that. I argued with him and said, why? What? Explain to me, why is my nose going to bleed? And the angel said, listen to me. And he put his hand out to like to flick his finger. And he clicked his finger and said, get up, go to the bathroom. Your nose is going to bleed. And I woke up. It was like he woke me up. And when I woke up, all I remember is that there was an overwhelming feeling. Get up quick and go to the bathroom. Your nose is going to bleed. And I jumped up and ran into the bathroom, and on the counter were two boxes of Kleenex. I pulled them out, and I looked in the mirror, but nothing was happening. All of a sudden, the blood started pouring out of my nose. And it's poured out so bad, so quick, I felt dizzy, like I was going to faint because I was losing so much blood so quickly, and I was amazed how much blood was coming out of my nostril. And I know there's not that much blood in your head, and if you lose too much blood, you might as well die. And so I said loudly, to the spirit, I said, God, stop this bleeding or I will die. I don't want to die. Stop.
It was that much. It was that much blood. That's a lot of blood.
It was that much blood. I couldn't even. I was just trying to hold back with grabbing just whole handfuls of napkins to my nose.
Wow.
And it was still just pouring out. And I said, God, if you are hearing me, stop this blood because I will die. And it started to quickly stop. It started to lessen and lessen and lessen. And finally got it down to where it was just a normal bleeding. And then a few seconds later, it stopped. And I looked in the sink bowl with all of the tissue and blood just surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lost so much blood, I got weak. And I finally got back to bed enough and just laid down and went right back to sleep. The next morning I could see, boy, there was blood all in that bowl, and I had really bled, but I don't know what to make of that. All I know is that the angel told me, get up, your nose is going to bleed.
Left nostril, right nostril?
Yeah.
Both?
I don't even remember. Mostly I do remember the left one. But I think it was coming out of both. But then when I talked with my friend Dr. Lear, Roger Lear, on the implant doctor, and I called and talked to him, and he said, well, it sure sounds suspicious to me because I know what implants do. And he said, it may have been somebody was putting an implant in, but it sounds more like somebody was taking one out of you. And they knew that it would cause bleeding if they pulled that out. I don't know. I'm just telling you what happened and what Dr. Lear's comments were.
What did the angel look like, Jordan? Like the other one? What did the angel look like? Like the other one?
It was a nondescript face. But the one thing, it was a beautiful, actually, it was very, very beautiful. Mostly a pastel, not any hard colors,
right. But
a very faint, beautiful pastel color. But there was a nondescript face. I looked at the face, but the one thing I realized the moment I saw it is it was not male or female. It was not man or woman at all. It was an entity, an angel. But you couldn't tell the description of the face.
Mm-hmm.
So when I hear people talking about they've seen angels and Angel Gabriel and all of that, I think to myself, yeah, I know. I've seen the Angel Gabriel myself. Mm-hmm. Michael, the Archangel, is the one who was.
Yeah, that's one of the biggies. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then when I go back and think about what Kenny Kingston said and what this kid in Florida said, both God and the devil are involved in his life, I have no idea how to understand any of this. I'm just telling you what happened.
Well, this is interesting because, as we know, those who study this, the idea of alien ET implants are usually done up the nose, one side or the other, sometimes both. And there can be significant bleeding, but not like what you're talking about. And maybe they did pull something out. Hard to know.
That's what I kind of suspect, is that the spirit entity we call an angel may have pulled something out and realized that it was going to bleed and possibly bleed badly. So
Most interesting. Well, I remember when you were down there in that condo on Rancho Bernardo and the foundation, and what was her name? Bonnie?
Yeah, Bonnie Lang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bonnie Lang. There was one, there's another, I think we got time for one.
Five or six minutes. Thing. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. This thing happened to me twice in my life. Once in Los Angeles, downtown, and once in Hawaii. The first time was in Hawaii. Back in 1968, 69, I went to Hawaii for the first time with some neighbors and friends of mine, and we all took a vacation to Hawaii, my wife and myself. And we were sitting in a restaurant right across the street from the Hilton Village, from the Hilton Hotel, and there was a big hotel there, but we were sitting in the ground floor restaurant. And I had my back to the front door. So anybody coming in, I would not see them. But somebody came in the front door, and there was an electrical shock as if somebody had plugged in a wire to the wall, having it open on the other end and touch you with it when you're not expecting it.
Ouch.
And you're getting shocked.
Yeah.
But getting shocked unexpectedly is a real shock, because it's bad enough if you're working with electricity and you get shocked, you know you had it coming. But if you're talking with other people and having breakfast and somebody comes up behind you and hits you with two live wires, that's a real shock. Well, when someone came in the front door, the electrical shock went through me so fast and so hard that I knocked over food on the table and fell backwards, but I didn't fall over. And there was food knocked over, the water and everything was knocked over on the table. And I did not decide to do anything. I was forced to do it. The voice in my head said to me, "Get up and get out of here quickly. Your life is in danger. Run quick." And so I got up and I started running. And I ran across the dining room, and the voice said, "Go out the back door. Go out the back door through the kitchen." And so I ran through the kitchen. There was the back door. I hit the back door. I'm out on the parking lot behind the restaurant. And the voice said, "Run quick. You're in trouble. Your life is in danger. Run." And I was running, and it was having me run toward the street. And the main street in Honolulu is a very wide main street that goes through downtown. And so I was running into that street, and there was, it's very, very crowded with traffic. And so I yelled to the spirit or whoever it was that was doing this to me, and I said, "I can't run. If I run into the street, I'll be killed." And they said, "No, you will not be killed. Run into the street." Well, I had no choice. I had to. I did. It was involuntary, I guess you would say. I did not volunteer to do this. I just was watching myself doing what I was doing. And so I ran into the street. frightened to death, but I couldn't do anything but that. So I ran into the street, and just so happened that when I hit the street, there was a break in the traffic, and there was about a half a block back with the cars coming. So I had plenty of time to cross the street without any problem. And then it said, run through the restaurant. And there was a Benihana's restaurant right on the corner. I ran behind that, and the voice said, run quickly. Your life is in danger. And it said, run around to the ocean side of the hotel. Well, that's right. The Hilton Hotel.
Right.
So I ran around to the ocean side of the hotel, and then the voice said, you're all right now. You're safe. Settle down. You're okay. And there was a park bench there. And the voice said, sit down at the bench. You're okay now. You're safe. And so I sat down and trying to catch my breath, and wondering what in the world did I just do? And what is the reason for what I just did?
Did you ever find out?
No, but I have a suspicion. I think that I'm here at the behest of someone, and there are enemies here who know who I am. And I'm not ready to do anything with them yet. I'm not ready to confront whoever these enemies are.
Wow, this voice in your head was a very clear, unambiguous, booming voice.
Yep.
Commanding you.
A very clear voice telling me, run, your life is in danger, quick.
Well, you're on the crossroads of some very interesting energies, to put it mildly. Wow.
Yep.
Great stuff. Okay, Jordan, thank you for the bedtime stories. We're out of time. We'll do it again very soon. And can't wait to hear the next group. All right.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jeff. Bye-bye.
Of course. Good night. Mr. Jordan Maxwell, and that's our program tonight. We'll be back with you tomorrow night. Hope to have the pleasure of your company then. Take care.